Time for hour number two of the Bible study, the Ask the Pastor Hour. In this hour, we're going to be talking with Pastor Brad Aldrich. He is connected with Cross Pollination Ministry. And has been on the Bible study before, so this is a return visit for him. Do you have a title? Are you, I shouldn't say you're connected to Cross. Are you like the boss?
Boss.
Are you the
executive ministry.
Executive boss?
I lead the ministry.
That's your title? Ministry leader.
Ministry leader, yeah. I guess you could say executive director.
Executive, see,
if you want. I don't like that title, personally.
You don't like that title?
No.
So if I want to call you the executive director, I'll have to do that behind your back.
I'll probably look over my shoulder.
That'd be like gossip.
Yeah.
I'm so perplexed. So how you been?
Good. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well. For the folks who have not heard you here on our station before, tell us what Cross Pollination Ministries is. Sounds like the birds and the bees to me. This might be interesting.
Well, since you start there, that's where we'll start. The name comes from the idea that we need more than one person to do something. Like with an apple tree. If you have one apple tree, you don't get apples. You need another tree in order to pollinate. So even if one tree does not produce fruit, you still need it to pollinate another. So you get apples. So with cross-pollination, focused on the cross, our logo recently changed, so we added a cross, and we have two trees, and they each had like three seeds in each. And we changed one of those trees to put the cross on to highlight that. But then the idea of two are better than one. If one would fall down, the other would pick them up. Also, as Jesus sent out the disciples, sent them out in pairs of two. And then, as we're doing our training, bringing in more than one church. If I do a training at a particular church, we bring in another. So that's the name. That's kind of the birds and the bees aspect. And then, in terms of we are a training ministry. So we teach people to facilitate spiritual conversations. So part of their day-to-day life. And also, we'll bring them in. If there are those who are interested, we'll take them into live settings out in public at a bus stop or a park or something, and they can watch live how this plays out in real situations.
You know, while we're on the subject of the birds and the bees, which, by the way, we don't talk about too much here on the Bible study. As a matter of fact, you could almost say we avoid that, but while we're on the subject, one of the things that I like to do is I like to grow flowers. As a matter of fact, I have flowers started in my basement right now. And I grow them from seed, and then I put them in little six-packs, and then in May, I take them outside and have a flower garden. One of the things that I enjoy in the ritual that involves, starting seeds in February and March, and then taking care of those flowers all the way until it freezes in October, is the arrival of the bees.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've noticed that when the bees are busy, and they're just bees everywhere, that they're flying around from flower to flower, and their legs are just sort of hanging down. I guess that's what you call them, legs on a bee. And their legs are just full of pollen. They're just full. It's yellow as it can be. It almost looks like it's in the way. Now, I'm pretty sure those bees don't wake up in the morning and say, well, another day of pollination to do here, you know, and they just go from flower to flower. And as they do that, they collect this pollen, which then they take to other flowers, and that's cross-pollination.
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
But they don't know they don't know they're doing that. They're just doing what they do. Is evangelism like that? Should it be that you're just out sort of doing what you do, and the pollination takes care of itself? Or do you have to be more intentional than the birds and the bees?
Yeah. Well, I think a good Lutheran answer would be it's a both and.
I hate that answer, by the way.
So, you know, yes, it is a part of our everyday. It's a part of just our life in Christ. We have been saved by Jesus. Our sins are forgiven. And as a part of that, it's just a natural part of who we are.
Well, you know, you're speaking a little bit idealistically there. To me, what you're saying is more how it ought to be than how it is, because there are many of us who are quite comfortable making our way from flower to flower as we go through life, And we don't pollinate anything with Jesus. We have our church life, and we have our other life, and those two don't cross-pollinate sometimes.
Maybe sometimes they don't in the way that we would hope that they would, but we're going to be a witness as a part of our life. And sometimes I'm not the greatest witness in my personal life, but there is that we are light bearers. Christ is alive in us, so there is the aspect that it is happening, whether we know it or not. The both and, the other side of it is what I found helpful personally, and the people that I train, what's helped them as well, is going out specifically to do certain things in certain places, and that helps sharpen our skills, the gifts, and then also is... You're on the hook. So I would not do as much evangelism as I do if I were not a trainer, because I have a training at a specific time, specific city, with specific people. If I wasn't doing that, I don't know, I might be home reading a book or watching TV, but I'm kind of on the hook to go do it, and I'm always glad that I go do it.
Are you a reluctant evangelist?
Sometimes I am, yeah. Sometimes I am reluctant. Sometimes I can't wait to get out. And other times, I just really don't want to. And those tend to be the times when we see the neatest things happen. We see God doing the neat things in the times when we just don't feel like doing anything.
You're married?
I am.
If we had a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being extrovert, maximum extrovert, and 1 being maximum introvert, what would your wife say you would come down on that scale?
Probably somewhat off the charts on extrovert.
10.
Probably 10, yeah. 9, maybe. 9 or 10.
And why do you think she would say that?
In social settings, a lot of times I'm pretty outgoing and introducing myself and getting to know people. So I'd say that's why she would say that.
Can I get a practical answer out of you now? I don't want to hear an idealistic answer. I want a real practical answer. As you look down the chart from your position at 9 or 10, and you scale downward to, or I shouldn't say downward, let's just go horizontally here. I don't want to make it sound like I'm putting anybody down.
Yeah.
You scale in the direction of 1. Where do you draw the line? Realistically, not idealistically, where do you draw the line where you say, well, you know, people who come in at this number or that number, they got no hope. I could train him and train him and train him. Now, I know that you're a confident guy, and I know that you think that you can train a 0.5 to be an evangelist, but be realistic here.
Okay, a couple things here. One is that just because someone's extroverted doesn't necessarily mean that they're more apt to go out and do something like this. And at the same time, some of the very introverted people who I've met, and like you said, it's not a scale. I mean, it might be a 1 to 10 that we're rating, but it's not one is better than the other. But some of the most introverted people have the most powerful witness, and there's a boldness.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. Yeah. A friend of mine in Dallas, he would go out with me very reluctantly, but a lot of times I'm like, no one else is going, and I can't really go by myself. So, and that's one of those things about getting myself on the hook. It's like, okay, I'm committed to go this specific place, this specific time, to do a specific thing, rather than just kind of wait for something to happen in the course of my daily life, which both are important. But so he would go with me. He was scared to death. He really didn't like it.
Scared to death. That's pretty scared.
Very scared. Okay, maybe scared to death is not...
No, I believe you're right. He probably was petrified.
Oh, yeah, and we both were, really. I mean, I am oftentimes.
And that's when everything inside of you is screaming, no, 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 mm-hmm. I don't want to do this.
Yeah, but the peer pressure is great because you don't want to look bad in front of your friends.
Yeah.
You go
yeah.
and do it anyway rather than bail out. But he watched me, and he didn't say a word. But and then at the end of the night, this was the first time he went out with me, actually. At the end of the evening, he was very discouraged because he wanted to say something. He didn't say anything. But before the end of the first, before the end of a week, he came to me and told me that he went through what he learned with someone at his office, with someone that he knows. He's not, he is a very introverted guy, and yet within 1 week he'd already used what he had learned in a very powerful way. And the
defined very powerful way.
A very powerful way is the woman responded to God's word. So using the Ten Commandments, using the gospel.
And it means she said, "Well, maybe I'll give it some thought." Or does it mean she fell on her face and became a Christian?
Yeah, well, somewhere in the middle, I guess. The Holy Spirit was at work with her. She started getting interested in attending a church, and has continued to come back to him asking questions. And that was 2 or 3 years ago, I think. And since then, he's talked to a few other people at his office. And not just a matter of, hey, why don't you come to church with me, but hey, this is who Jesus is. And so starting from there rather than starting from, would you like to go to church?
You know, if I understood the news that I heard this morning correctly, the Supreme Court just refused to take a case in which a high school coach had been in the habit of apparently praying with his players, and then word came, you can't do that anymore. You can't lead organized prayer. And so he didn't do that, but what he did was he allowed the players to pray, and then he would, instead of leading that prayer or even participating in it, would just take a knee and bow his head. And he's been told he can't do that either. Mm. We scratch our heads when we get to a question like that, because, you know, if my child were in a situation, I have a son who played football. If he had come home to me and said, "Dad, our coach is leading us in prayers to Allah," you know, after games, I'd have had a problem with that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if a valedictorian wants to credit, I don't care who he or she wants to credit. If she wants to do that, I think the freedom of speech should allow for that, and sometimes that's not permitted. So there's a place somewhere in the middle. All I know is it seems like the freedom to express yourself in a religious way is getting narrower and narrower. And I don't know how old you are. What are you, in your 30s maybe?
40.
You're 40? Wow, what a young-looking guy. So I'm 16 years older than you. I can remember when it seemed like everybody just sort of had a kind of a Christian outlook, and none of these things would ever even been discussed. If the coach was praying after the football game, just about everybody in town would have said, "That's great." But that's all gone now, which means your job gets harder every week.
Well, it is happening. What you're saying is happening, but it doesn't necessarily make my job harder.
I don't understand that. I don't follow that.
Yeah. Well,
which tells me that your experience and my assumptions are way off. What I assume to be true for you, when you go out as you do with Cross Pollination Ministries, and we haven't talked about this today, but we've talked about it before, so I bring people up to speed here a little bit. But you'll go out on a street corner.
Yes.
You'll go out on a Friday night.
Yes.
Street corner. Start talking about Jesus. That's, for some people listening to us, that is their absolutely worst nightmare, and they're ashamed to admit it, but it is, you know, they can't imagine something that they would feel more uncomfortable doing, but that's what you do.
That's part of what we do, and that aspect is becoming more difficult because police officers have, I don't know, 1,000 or more ordinances that they're supposed to enforce, and they cannot be experts in all of them. And a lot of times, not a lot of times with me, but with people that I know that are doing this street type of ministry, they are more and more being asked by police officers to stop. And there just tends to be this thought out there that this shouldn't happen because of things that happened, like in the Supreme Court, cases brought forward and so forth. People just generally think that this is not allowed anymore, and it is allowed. But it is not making it harder for me in the ministry that I do, because what I do is a training ministry. We did one in Ascension just a couple days ago on Sunday.
And here in St. Louis.
In St. Louis, yes. And I'm going to do two in Kansas, two different cities in Kansas this coming weekend. But we did the whole thing in the basement of the church. So you could say underground church, literally. But so what can happen on the street?
So and it is have happening you ever more been, and more. Have you ever had a policeman say you can't do that?
Yeah, yeah, a couple times. A couple times in St. Louis, they've asked me to step down. And one time was legitimate.
What do you mean step down?
From where I need a little bit of elevation. When you do a little bit of like open air proclamation, you need to get about a head above everybody else. So I was standing on, I don't know, a few bricks or something, and they said I need to get down because it was blocking flow of traffic, which is true. There were 40 or 50 people watching. And then when the police came up, I think more people came because they thought this would be very interesting. So if there is a blockage of traffic issue, it's got to stop because it's, you know, kind of
sure.
a public demonstration or whatever
right.
that's causing safety issues. That's right. It can be dangerous. And then the next weekend I was out there again, and similar situation, but there was not a block of flow of traffic, and the police said I had to step down and asked why, and they said a block of flow of traffic, and I wasn't going to argue it, but it wasn't true. So that was St. Louis. But that happening doesn't make the ministry I lead more difficult. It does make it more challenging at times as to where do we do this in a public setting. But 90% of the training we do is in a private setting. But in Minneapolis once, I was threatened by a police officer that he'd fine me $100 and take me into custody if I gave out one more track, a gospel track. And in this case, people were reaching and taking them out of my hand. I was not giving them to people. I was not saying, do you want one of these? People were coming and taking them because I had just done some open-air preaching and got down and people were asking questions. People were taking them from me, and the police officer said he'd take me into custody if I gave out one more.
On the grounds of?
On the grounds of the, apparently.
What law were you breaking?
None. I was not breaking a law. This was a public sidewalk. The management of one of the businesses there said that they did not want distributional literature, and I was going against the wishes of this particular business manager, and the police officers were basically, I think, more acting in terms of, like, security, like a campus security, than they were police. Because I asked, has this stood up in a federal court? And he said, well, you'll be the first to find out. I was like, well, I really, not that interested. But it was really antagonistic to me. Really egging me on, saying, just do it. And I was like, I don't want to. He's like, just do it and you'll find out. I said, well, I'm not, really don't care to.
Why isn't that harassment?
And I think it was harassment. But it's one of those things that I want to go out and share the gospel. I really don't care to get involved in standing up for my rights sometimes, so to speak.
Well, frequently when we have these conversations, I ask you about introverted people, because I'm thinking to myself, that must be your greatest challenge. You say that you're on the extroverted side of center, and it seems to me that that would make this kind of work easier than harder. It would helps to be social and outgoing. It would seem to me if you're going to go stand on a box on a street corner and talk about Jesus. Can the extrovert be a problem too? Can the extrovert be a bowling ball just blasting through the pins there and getting too far out in front of himself and maybe being disrespectful to the police
no.
officer? And can the extrovert be a problem?
Certainly. Well, introverts can do that also. When someone's upset, animals are going to take care of their young. Mother animals are going to take care of their young. So you have an animal that's normally very friendly, like my dog with his pizza. I have a very friendly dog, but
yeah.
I tried taking a piece of pizza away from him the other night and about ripped my hand off. It's like, who are you and what'd you do with my dog?
Yeah.
So, I mean, introverts can do that as well, but it really is a matter of as we go out, we're looking at 1 Peter 5, verse 5, God opposes the proud, gives grace to the humble. And so for those who are hearing, that's true. Also for those who are sharing, that's true. If I go out in pride rather than humbleness, I'm going to be more apt to do something that's disrespectful. So introverted or extroverted, going out by the grace of God in humbleness, a lot of that stuff's just going to slide off our back. I can handle the police officer in Minneapolis that was antagonistic toward me and respond without a whole lot of emotion, or at least without showing a whole lot of emotion, just realizing I'm in the situation I'm in, and being upset or, you know, whatever is not going to help this particular situation.
You know, the Apostle Paul felt that kind of oppression or resistance, and on more than a few occasions created a kind of a civil disturbance.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When you're in that moment, when the authorities are saying, you can't do what you're doing, and you say, what law am I breaking? And they don't have a law. They mm-hmm. just, this businessman or this person doesn't want you doing this, so you got to move on. How do you know whether the Lord wants you to create a witness of compliance, mm-hmm. peacefulness, and move on so that the people who might be watching see that? Or maybe on this particular day, the Lord wants you to hold your ground and stand up for your rights to talk about your Savior and maybe risk getting the handcuffs. Mm-hmm. Is it either or do you have to play it ear by ear, case by mm-hmm. case?
Well, the particular case in Minneapolis, I was with university students from Concordia St. Paul University. So if I had been handcuffed that night, that would have been the last time I worked with any students at that campus. So it was very evident in that situation that just, you know, back off. If I'm with people who are very familiar with what we do out on the street, I'll probably be a little more aggressive toward saying I disagree. I will step down, but I disagree, and I'd like to get your contact information, and let's just discuss this further on Monday. Not to make a scene on the street, but not necessarily to back off altogether. Now, in Minneapolis, I felt like my only option was to back off altogether because I didn't see that it would help in the proclamation of the gospel. But as far as the Christian persecution, kind of where we start with all this in the Supreme Court, a friend of mine, she had a team from her church in China, and they were meeting with some Chinese Christians, and they said, well, in America, in the United States, we're praying that the persecution will come to an end in your country. And they were like, really? Well, we're praying. Yeah, they're praying that, he said, we're here in China. We are praying that the persecution will be more severe in your country. And you've probably heard, I don't know, I can't quote who said it, but the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church, one of the early church fathers. And you see areas where, you know, the church is under severe persecution. People are being imprisoned, killed, beaten, and you see the church growing like crazy. And here we're looking at churches that average attendance continues to drop. And so when we see some of this stuff happening in the Supreme Court, I think it's a good wake-up call for us to say, you know, we may not have a lot of the freedoms we enjoy for a very long period of time. Now, how much we might lose, I don't know, but we've lost a lot more than you probably would have imagined when you look back over the last 20 years.
When we come back to the other side of the break, the church situation has been deteriorating in this country for a while. We seem to be getting further and further away from the Bible. But now the secular situation is not going well either. A lot of turmoil in just in the world. I want to find out if that is good or bad for you on the other side of the break. Stay with us.
AMA 50 KFUO celebrating 85 years of proclaiming the gospel and touching lives.
I remember as a child growing up in a Lutheran church that we got in Sunday school the junior broadcaster. It's kind of a little four-leaf pamphlet, and on the back side it had a kind of a puzzle type thing where you had to translate different characters into words. Like you had a human eye, and that would be the word I, and there are different other characters. You, after you all done, you had a message on the back end of this little junior broadcaster thing that we got as I was growing up in the 50s. So that was kind of interesting. Tied in with KFUO. It was a KFUO publication somehow or other.
Do you have a story about how AM 850 KFUO touched your life? Call the memory line and record your message. 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172, the AM 850 KFUO memory line.
Going to Meerkat School. Find out how they learn next on today's Creation Moments. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
Behavioral researchers define teaching very specifically. First, of course, a teacher must have pupils. Then the teacher must be less quick and efficient when showing the pupils how to do the task than if he were doing it alone. Finally, the pupils must learn the task more quickly than they would if they were left on their own. By that definition, humans, of course, are teachers. We saw on a previous program that only a species of ant meets this definition of teaching. But now researchers from the University of Cambridge in England say that meerkats also qualify as teachers. They found that experienced hunters will take young, inexperienced pups with them when they hunt. They will let the youngsters watch them as they catch prey. And of course, when they catch some small prey, the youngsters will vocally beg for a handout. However, only 35% of those handouts are served dead to the youngsters. The rest of the time, they have to learn how to kill the caught prey themselves. On the other hand, older, more experienced pups received already killed handouts only 10% of the time. Further tests involve live and dead prey show that those given live prey could learn to subdue it in only 3 days. Despite the researchers' presupposition that teaching evolved, God is still the one who teaches the teachers.
For a free copy of our Creation Resource Catalog, visit our website at creationmoments.com or call us toll-free at 1-800-42-BIBLE. That's 1-800-422-4253. And be sure to join us next time for another Creation Moment, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
All right, troops, step lively, spring into action, and march in support of AM 850 KFUO. In fact, march right over to your telephone right now and call us and hear how easy it is to become an AM 850 KFUO Day sponsor. Commemorate a loved one, observe an anniversary or birthday. We have many open calendar days during the month of March, that is, in support of your local station. AM 850 KFUO wants you.
I'm Robbie, and I'm on a waiting list for a double lung transplant.
A lung disease is threatening Robbie's life.
I've had cystic fibrosis all my life, but now my future depends on getting a transplant.
Right now, tens of thousands of people are waiting for an organ or tissue transplant.
It's hard to imagine a greater gift than the gift of life from an organ donor. It means I get to keep living.
You have the power to donate life. Be an organ and tissue donor. To find out how, go today to www.donatelife.net.
Our number is at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I'm curious as to what you think, listener. Are you ready to go to the street corner? Are you ready to sign up and cross pollination ministries and head for the street corner? And are you ready to maybe, maybe not, face the policeman who says, all right, let's move along here, please, no more of this? Or would you rather just stay home and watch CSI New York? I mean, you have that choice. With us today is a friend of ours, Brad Ulrich. He is, we're going to call him the executive director of Cross Pollination Ministries because he said he doesn't like that title. Just got to pull his chain a little bit here. I'm wondering, Pastor, if the downturn in everyday living here in America, meaning we are fighting two wars, certainly the Iraq War is unpopular. We are deep into a recession, and some people are using the D word, depression. Culturally, we are, seems split right down the middle on things like abortion and gay marriage. Very divisive. It's not a calm, peaceful time in America. Is that good or bad for you? Because it seems to me that if everybody is just feeling real good about life and everything is great, they're not going to have time for you. But when things are destabilized, maybe they're a little bit more likely to listen. Yes or no?
Great question. You know, there's the one aspect that's on the street. I think another aspect is in our the relationships we already have. I think there's another aspect of the church. Those are our believers. One of the things that my family and I do, this is more as a family thing than a cross-pollination thing, is working with immigrants. And what we find with immigrants, working with Edifris Makasha and the people he's working with, and what Pastor Makasha says is that people coming from Africa, they're very committed Christians, and then they come to the United States as immigrants, they have nothing, then they find a job, then they get a car, then they get a house.
Oh, no, don't tell me that we're
and
taking
they drop
African
out of the
people
church.
And they're dropping out,
dropping
oh,
out
no.
of the church. Because the adversity is not there like it was when they were fighting for their lives.
The adversity is not there.
Yeah, so they're like, why should I go to church? I have a house, I have a car, I have what I need. And so...
are you suggesting that a little adversity is a good thing?
Well, you know, I don't know if you've heard about this or not, but like they've done tests like with amoebas, and amoebas are always kind of fighting for their lives because there's this various situations going on, and they've done tests where they like will isolate the amoeba from anything that would harm it, and it dies because when it stops fighting for its life, and not that it's in a life or death struggle every moment.
Now, is that a spiritual lesson, Pastor? Are you using an amoeba for a spiritual lesson?
Well, I guess it can be, because, goodness, you're going to tax my memory right here, but I think it's in Romans where Paul says that out of adversity comes perseverance, and perseverance faith. You know where that is?
Not off the top of my
head. Be good to look at. If Tom Baker's listening, I'm sure he can tell us right away.
So, are you more encouraged? I see. How do I ask this question so that I don't sound disrespectful or flippant? I don't mean to sound flippant. Are you more encouraged in your work in doing evangelism the worse it gets in the world here in America?
I think whether good or bad, there's always people who want to hear. I think in bad times, there tends to be more of an openness by more people. But in any economy, in any life situation, there are people who, on the outward, have it all. They've made it, the success, everything else, but yet they're feeling empty on the inside. Then there are people who've lost it all, but they're still hard-hearted. They don't want to hear. But I think in general, it does make it, people are more receptive when things are difficult for them.
So, how many years have you been at this?
Well, I graduated from...
I struggle because you look like you're 25. And I mean that as a compliment, but you do. You look like you're 25. You look like you just got out of college, maybe, and you tell me you're 40. So how long have you been at this?
I'm 40. I graduated from the seminary in 2000, second career, started a church in Texas, and then after 3 years, went from zero to mid-70s average worship, and it was then a parish. It was no longer a church start. So I moved on from there and just started this ministry as a worker priest after starting the church. So really the ministry that I'm doing in terms of training people to do the one-to-one evangelism, whether it's on the street or whether it's in their personal relationships, is fairly recent. And but this is fairly new territory for me. So sometimes I'm just a couple steps ahead of people that I'm training, depending on where they are in their training. Some people have been through some fairly advanced training with me already.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Hi, Lois. You're on the Bible study.
Good morning. Good morning, Pastor Aldridge.
Good morning.
I saw you Sunday at our church when you were there.
Yes.
And I just want you to know how fascinating it was, and I just hope you'll come back so we can have some more of it, because I really think we need to learn this, especially in view of the fact that our church is doing a program called the Mission Revitalization Initiative, where we're trying to be a more outward-reaching church instead of one that only looks inside to our own needs.
Good. Now, was the training scary for you, Lois?
No, not really.
No?
Yeah, see, Lois, she's a warrior.
What about some of the introverted friends there? Were they scared or were they hanging in?
Well, you know, I'm a
very
introverted person.
Okay.
And you probably wouldn't have known it from talking to me.
No, I didn't guess that.
But Jesus Christ is my passion. And whatever you're passionate about, you're not introverted about. Mm-hmm. So I used to go out on evangelism calls, and I would have never thought that I could do that. But whatever God wants you to do, he does not lead you where he does not precede you.
And do I remember right, were you the one that was afraid to talk to Muslims and Jews?
Yes.
Yes, and so I said, well, that's okay. There's plenty of other people to talk to. And what's your response to that?
Right. My response to I just felt intimidated by it. I didn't feel like I could do that.
Right, and I said, well, there's plenty of other people to talk to. You don't have to talk to the Jews and the Muslims.
Right.
And
right.
Your response surprised me.
I don't remember what
you said. Oh, okay. Your response was, well, those are the people I feel that I'm supposed to go talk to.
Oh.
Well, I feel like you're supposed to talk to anybody you encounter if you have the opportunity.
See, I was kind of letting you off the hook there, but you were saying that... She put herself back in the hook.
Could
I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you think that that this is something that God wants us all to do? I know when I was doing it, people would say to me, "Oh, I couldn't possibly do that. That's for you to do, not for me." Is this something He wants all of His people to be equipped to do?
Depends what you say. All to be equipped, and in what way equipped? Because everyone's going to be going to communicate in their own ways, and I encourage people to learn to do something that's going to stretch you a little bit outside your comfort zone. You don't want to take too far a step because it might be too much too fast. But anybody can follow me and watch from a safe distance as I'm out on the street with somebody. So in that regard, I think anybody can do it. And then in terms of just sharpening the gifts, the tools that you have, the gifts that God's given you, anybody can improve upon what God's given them. So in that respect, I'd say yes, it's for everybody.
Okay.
But in terms of the specific method, no. I mean, there's different things that work for different people. So we teach a variety of various tools. So some are attracted more to one way and some attracted more to another.
But we can be evangelizing even if we're just sitting at a dining room table having a conversation with some people and they say something that, you know, really is not Christian at all.
Mm-hmm.
And you could maybe say, you know, well, what makes you think that? Why would you say that? I mean, that was one of the things you were teaching us Sunday.
Yeah, great you know, opening question.
What makes you say that? What is your source?
The simple question, why do you say that? And saying it in a very non-judgmental way, saying it with great interest, is a very good way to help draw people out. And once they're drawn out, then the spiritual conversation has been started by them, really.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you're not infringing upon their boundaries. And obviously, if someone's hesitating, you want to respect their boundaries and just back off and talk about what they're interested in.
Well, thank you so much for coming to our church, and I hope you'll be back.
Thanks, Lois.
God
thanks for calling.
Bye.
Thank you, Lois. So now, Pastor Spomer was here on Monday, which was like yesterday, right? Today, Tuesday? Yeah.
That's right.
He said something about an MRI at Ascension. And I'm thinking they're doing magnetic resonance imaging now at Ascension. And no, this is a different kind of MRI. What are we talking about here?
Mission Revitalization Initiative. And so I think Ascension is the first church in Missouri to, they're kind of going through it as the first church, and helping them to identify their areas of strength, their areas which they can use improvement, with the intention of reaching people in their community that do not have a church home, and reaching people that don't know Christ.
So that is that the name of the training exercise?
Now, the Mission Revitalization Initiative is a process that a church will go through with the district. And I know at least the Missouri district is doing it with churches, offering it for churches. And also in conjunction with Pastor Terry Tiemann, or maybe Dr. Tiemann, who's in the Nashville area in the Mid-South district. And he's actually here today, and I might even get to meet him. He's here in St. Louis. I just sent him an email yesterday. I said, I'd like to meet you. And he's like, I'm here. But he's working with churches throughout the synod and helping them with a similar process. I don't know if he calls it the MRI or if he's got another name for it, but here in Missouri, they're using what he has learned over his many years of experience as a mission executive, and now he's working throughout the synod.
So when you sit down with a group of people, you go to Ascension Lutheran Church, or you go, where are you going, to Kansas City this week, you said?
Going to Kansas State University, and then Alta Vista, Kansas. Alta Vista, Kansas is pretty much in the middle of Kansas, and kind of the middle, well, I don't know, if the middle of nowhere, hopefully that's not offensive, but there's just a lot of nice, beautiful fields around them without many people.
When you sit down, let's just use a hypothetical group of 10 people here.
Mm-hmm.
In a typical Brad Aldrich cross-pollinations ministry training session, of those 10, how many of them are going to be, you're going to say to yourself, oh, these people are scared. These people are very uncomfortable in this setting. How many out of 10 do you think?
I never know. And when I make assumptions, I'm normally wrong. So I ask questions. I'm like, I'll ask on a scale from 1 to 10. What's your fear level about what we're going to learn, about actually implementing some of the things that we're learning here? And so I get a feel from the group. And same when we do go out on the street, I want to know, who's most afraid and who's least afraid, and just kind of making our groupings and our priority of training based on those that are a little more willing to go out on a limb, and then bringing in those that want to stay closer to the nest. We bring those out, those people out over time.
Is there a kind of a demography that goes with the group? Do you say to yourself, well, those are my extroverts, those are my introverts, those are my whatever, or
That's a good question.
Is it counterproductive to try to categorize like that?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. And a lot of times we're categorizing just constantly throughout the day in various situations we're in. But recently I've been communicating with a pastor of a church up north of here, and it seemed that what I was hearing from him was that, and it's through email, so I'm not sure. I look forward to talking to him soon. But that people were getting the idea that the staff thought the congregation was not there faith-wise, maybe were not mature enough in their faith yet for something like this. Because a lot of pastors, for whatever reason, say, well, our church is not ready for this. But I've not really found a church that's not ready. I've gone in some situations that, from my standpoint, I'd be like, this is the least likely person or the least likely church that I would think would work. And it works. But in terms of your question was about is it categorizing who will kind of work and who will not. What I found is it's not a matter of like maturity and faith. It's not a matter of introvert, extrovert. It's really a matter of willingness, and people are willing regardless of personality type and so forth, where they're at in their faith walk. The more willing someone is, the more they're really they'll step out and do things that they're not comfortable doing.
So when you do training, typically it's in a congregational setting, am I right? You have a church,
typically,
a congregation
yes.
calls you and says, please come do this for
yes,
us.
Yes, I have done universities like I'm doing this weekend. Also did one in the living room in Nebraska recently.
So as you're sitting there dealing with a group that is signed up at Ascension, for example,
mm-hmm.
What have you found as part of people's perceptions that the congregation is mostly or has as a priority a kind of a maintenance mindset? I believe in Jesus. I want to participate in a group of people who also believe in Jesus. We hold some beliefs in common, which differentiates us maybe from that denomination or that church down the road. And I want to be able to gather in a place that is non-threatening, where the people are like-minded. And that's why I go to St. John's. And then along comes somebody who suggests, no, this is not supposed to be a safe haven where you know that you can come and worship without feeling threatened by false teachings or strange new teachings. This is supposed to be a launching pad. you know, we just gather here for an hour a week maybe, or a couple hours a week, but after that we want to launch you out into your community and out into your family. And somebody says, no, excuse me. I'm very happy with the kind of maintenance mode here that we have here. It works for me, and I don't want to be launched into anything. Do most folks want a maintenance congregation, or do they want a launching congregation?
I don't know that I'm in a position to answer that. What I do know is that wherever I go, I'm consistently surprised. Like I say, I make assumptions I'm normally wrong, and I may walk into a group and say, you know, they really are complacent, and God shows me that I'm wrong. And when we're talking to people, like in a public setting and drawing people in a conversation, if we can draw them in with some humor and help them relax, they're there. And they'll have the conversation with us, and regardless of whether they're Buddhist, Hindu, atheist, agnostic, Christian, whatever. And going to a church, it's like that too. If I can go in and just help people loosen up and laugh and relax, they're drawn in and they want to learn. And what I'm doing is I'm training, and people are learning. So I don't go in with any kind of an agenda that you guys need to go out there, because I don't know. They might be out there more than I am. There was a time in my ministry where I did try to do that encouraging of get out there and go and talk to your friends and so forth. But I really see my role is I'm there for people who want to learn. Ascension, no one signed up to be there. They might have gotten a surprise. I think someone got forewarned, but it was the normal Sunday school hour. Roland also teaches there. His group came in. And so it wasn't a course someone signed up for. It was 50 minutes that we had together. And it seemed to go very well. Lois called in with some positive feedback on that as well. Lois didn't know what she was getting into when she walked into this Bible study Sunday morning. So we made it fun and did some icebreaker type things. And once the groups warmed up, I don't think I've met a group that has really been resistant.
Are you a professional evangelist?
And according to my call documents, you could say that, but I'm practicing. I guess it's like a lawyer practices law, a physician practices medicine. I'm a practicing evangelist.
But you're a pro.
This is what I do full-time, yes.
When you get done going through the training exercise, whether that is sort of the drive-by, hey, I'm here for the Bible study hour, or maybe organized where people actually come and are prepared to spend more than an hour. Mm-hmm. When you leave, do you want the people that you have trained to be active evangelists, or is it okay to be a passive evangelist?
Either one is great.
Do you understand what I mean
yeah.
by those terms?
Oh, yeah. I think that's kind of where we started out the hour with, was going about your daily life versus going out specifically to a specific place. Is that kind of what you're saying, or different than that?
What I'm saying is if a person is a passive evangelist, what that mm-hmm. means is that if they're in a social setting and the subject turns to sports, well, they can shoot the breeze about that. If mm-hmm. it turns to the economy, they can shoot the breeze about that. If it somehow turns to be about religion or about Christianity, well, then at that moment, they are prepared to engage that conversation. They didn't start it. They didn't know it was going to happen, mm-hmm. but they can participate. That's kind of a passive
okay.
approach.
Yeah, no, that's
an active
great.
Approach
yeah.
is I'm going to be meeting three people for lunch, and I'm going to figure out a way to mm-hmm. start a discussion about religion. That's
yeah.
Now, do you want people to do that? Do you teach them how to do that, how to turn lunch into a discussion about religion?
Yes, we do, but at the same time, what I want people to feel is more confident in their Christian witness, their testimony to Jesus, regardless situation, regardless of whether they're bringing it up or not. We do help people find ways to open up that door, basically testing it and watching body language. If someone doesn't want to talk, it's like we need to watch those clues so they don't have to say, oh, I really don't want to talk about this.
If you were going to teach me, we just had enough time for you to teach mm-hmm. me one thing that would send me in the direction of that goal, to teach me to be more confident about talking about Jesus. Isn't that what you just said?
Yes.
If you were going to just teach me one thing, what would it be?
The one thing that I think is best to keep in mind is the 1 Peter 5, verse 5, God opposes the proud, gives grace to the humble. I think another thing that's important to understand is God trusts you. Jesus trusts you with his message.
That might be a mistake. just trying to be funny there, folks. But the point remains that I've screwed up a lot of things in my life, mm-hmm. Pastor. And if you know how many things I've screwed up, I don't know if you trust me with anything.
Yeah.
So what are you trying to tell me? Jesus trusts me with his message.
Well, we can't make anything worse for an unbeliever. We can't make things anything worse for them because they're either a believer or unbeliever. And but God's given us his word, and it's the matter of using his word. It's good seed. So that it's not the quality of the sower that's important, it's the quality of the seed. And so just using a couple basic, easy things.
Couple? What are they?
A couple. One would be, an icebreaker is a very good way to start. This says, you must say, I got an IQ test for you. This is a little quiz, see how smart you are.
Is this going to embarrass me in front of
No, not at all, because I didn't get it.
All
most
people
don't.
Fooled here.
No, because if it was easy, then it wouldn't be any fun. You must remove a marble from inside a sealed glass bottle without pulling out the cork or damaging the bottle. How?
Well, it's going to give me a card here. We need video here. You must remove a marble from inside a sealed glass bottle without pulling out the cork or damaging the bottle. How? I don't know how. Does it say on the other side?
Yeah, push in the cork.
Push the cork in.
I had to look at the answer myself. So from there, now how do you take, what does that have to do with anything? You'd say, well, you know, a lot of times we make things a lot harder than they are. And about God, you know, a lot of times we make things a lot more complicated than they are. And it's as simple as we're fallen. We're living in a fallen world, and we've sinned. And therefore, we are under God's punishment. But God sent his son Jesus, who was punished in our behalf. So through repenting and trusting in him, God sees as what Jesus has done as payment on our behalf. So we're right with God, and we have forgiveness of sins, and we are free from sin, and we'll live with him in heaven forever. So in a very simple way, does that help your confidence at all?
Well, yeah, I can see how that would have an impact. We got just about a minute left here. If somebody expresses interest in this, and you're in a conversation, and you say, well, you know, I actually do this training, what's the one thing that you like to say to somebody that you think will encourage them maybe to come to your next training session?
I ask a lot of questions. I'll ask, one of the best questions, I think, is where do you see hurdles in terms of you communicating the gospel to others? What do you see as hurdles? Because they're different for all of us. What's very interesting, I'm meeting with a couple tonight that originally contacted me when I was on your show months ago.
Uh-huh.
And she was actually then, she and Kyle were on the afternoon show after they went on the street with me. But her name's Ann, and she called and said, I heard you on the Ask a Pastor and interested in learning more. How do I do a training? I said, well, you know, we can start right now on the phone. So went through a few things with her and gave her a little bit of background. I said, you want to learn more? She said, yeah. I said, well, go get your husband. And they came out with me 2 days later, and we're meeting tonight to see how we can have more of an impact there in their young couples group at Concordia Kirkwood.
Interesting. Well, thanks for the visit.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Enjoy when you are able to stop by here. That's Pastor Brad Aldrich, Cross Pollination Ministries. Tomorrow we'll continue. We'll finish Mark chapter 6 with Pastor Tim Ostermeyer, and we'll have Lenten worship, live Lenten worship, from Peace Lutheran Church in South St. Louis County in the 11 o'clock hour.
Support is needed for the Bible study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of the Bible study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.